Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
Presidential politics, the writer's strike, and LA's economy. Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. Forget about the current TV season, even next year's season's in trouble as TV studios cancel 65 contracts and threaten to cancel more. 10 weeks into the writer's strike, we'll survey the spreading damage. Is there a bright spot in LA's economic picture? With the California primary 3 weeks away, Clinton's ahead, and four Republicans are all within the margin of error. But the undecideds could change things in both parties. Those stories and more tonight. First, here's the news. Warren Ollie back with Which Way LA on KCRW. 10 weeks into the writer's strike, even next year's TV season is threatened. We'll find out why and look at the impact on LA's economy. On Reporter's Notebook, Governor Schwarzenegger and the politics of term limits. First, this story. With 3 weeks until primary day, the LA Times has polled likely voters in California. Clinton leads Obama 47% to 31%. John McCain leads Romney 20-16, but they and two other Republicans are all within the margin of error. Susan Pincus is director of the LA Times poll. Always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Warren.
This is reflecting what's happening nationwide. In California, Republicans just can't make up their minds.
You're absolutely right. They're all over the map. They just can't decide on which candidate they'd like. There are different groups that like one candidate over another, and I think that's what's making the difference here.
Well, who are the ones who like McCain and give him 20%?
Well, McCain is more likable for the moderate Republicans, and he is one that the voters think has honesty and integrity. He represents their values. In terms of absentee voters, which is a very big group in California, as we all know, they are supporting McCain, while those who are going to go to the precincts to vote are dividing their vote. There is sort of a gender difference where men are going towards McCain, and I think that has to do with national security, where women are split between the top four candidates. In terms of college degree and not having a college degree, he does well among the highly educated voter. In terms of evangelical, there is about a third of Republican voters who say they're either born again or evangelical, and they are giving more of their vote to Huckabee, but McCain is right behind him. It's like 26 for Huckabee, 18 for McCain.
Okay, that's among the evangelicals.
Yes.
Again, overall, we've got McCain at
20%. At 20, right.
Romney with 16. Where does Romney draw his support?
Well, it's hard to say since it's such a small group.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though McCain is getting 20, as you said in the beginning, it's all within margin of error.
Yeah.
So he's not really getting any major group. McCain is getting more of the groups in terms of, you know, higher shares of that electorate.
So we got Romney at 16, Giuliani at 14, Huckabee at 13, and again, McCain with a 20, not a real lead because the margin of error is 5%. What do you think is going to make the difference?
Well, let me just say one thing about the Republican primary, which is a negative for McCain. Independents are locked out of the Republican primary.
Mm-hmm.
They can vote in the Democratic primary. And McCain's big force, or big backing, is really among independents. And because this is a closed primary on the Republican side, you know, it's going to be, I think, you know, we won't know until the day of the election, basically.
It's interesting how this is playing out because, of course, it's the very conservative people that are now controlling the mechanism of the party and who said, no, we're not going to allow the independents in. And sure enough, the independents are going for McCain, who's not their favorite.
Right. And then so now you have to look on the Democratic side because now all the independents are going to go and vote on the Democratic side because they're not allowed to vote in the Republican primary.
All right, if we have a lead then with Hillary Clinton now having 41 and Obama at 47.
Clinton at 47, Obama at 31, and John Edwards is at 10.
All right, so could the independents, if they went to Obama, make up the difference between 47 and 31?
Well, what's interesting, if you look at those that are registered to vote independent, there's not much difference between them and the Democrats. They're both voting. Both groups are voting for Hillary Clinton. But if you look at those who consider themselves independent, you know, how do you describe yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Among those people who describe themselves as independent, they go slightly more for Obama, 31 for Clinton, 38 for Obama. So I think we really have to... Or the campaign, I would say, would have to figure out who are really independents and who are really Democratic primary voters.
Well, now, what's really important, it seems to me, too, is that 6 in 10 Republican primary voters said they might change candidates, and 40% of the Democrats said they still might change their minds,
That
too?
Is true. And we've seen this in New Hampshire. We saw this in Iowa. We've seen this nationally. The Republicans are more dissatisfied with their candidates. They are still choosing. They have not decided. And there are large groups of them, majorities of them, say that they can change their vote. On the Democratic side, it's really now been narrowed down to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And their supporters are very solid in their support.
All right. Well, a lot is to come. The candidates are beginning to show up here in California. Of course, they've got a lot of other states all voting on the same day, including New York and New Jersey, also enormous states. So it remains to be seen how long they can be here. But they can certainly spend a lot of money on television. And I guess that's what we're going to be seeing.
And I would think that they would have to do it sooner rather than later because of our high absentee voters.
Okay. Well, Susan Pincus, always good to talk with you.
Thank you, Warren.
Come back again soon. Director of the Los Angeles Times Poll. I'll be right back with Which Way LA.
You're listening to Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. Warren Olney also hosts To the Point about issues of national concern. Weekdays at noon on KCRW, distributed nationwide by Public Radio International.
Warren Olney back with Which Way LA. The Golden Globes show was reduced to a press conference, and late-night TV hosts are limping along without writers. Now 20th Century Fox, CBS Paramount, NBC Universal, and Warner Brothers have canceled 65 development and production agreements worth as much as $2 million apiece. Michael Spire is executive editor of Daily Variety. And, Michael, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, nice to be here.
What does this mean for the current television season?
Well, the current television season's already been hit because a lot of the shows have already been canceled and we're not seeing any new episodes except a few here and there that were already done. But what it really means is development for the next season is just really it's really hit devastation because you have a lot of these deals of people who might not have had anything in production now, but they certainly were there for a reason, and that reason was to develop shows.
They do the pilots.
Right, exactly.
So does this mean then there won't be any pilots, and however soon the writer's strike ends,
there might not be another new show
next season?
They didn't cancel every deal. They just kind of picked and chose, and I'm sure there were some that were just kind of vanity deals that were there anyway. So, but yes, they did cancel some, and it just means that they're looking. It's starting to stretch into next year, and who knows if it lasts any longer, then we might have another 2008 without any new shows as well.
Well, the studios are threatening too, are they not? If it goes another month to cancel some more contracts.
Absolutely. I mean, the 65 sounds like a lot, but there's a lot of deals all over town, so it could grow to really historic proportions here.
What about the Golden Globes? Did that really shake anybody up, the fact that the show was sort of like a book reduced to a pamphlet?
Sure. I mean, it shook everyone up because while we like to make fun of how these award shows can be terrible, in the end, look at what we got when there are none. So it was pretty bad, and now it just depends on what side of the fence you come down on. It's either the writer's fault for striking and making the awards turn into this, or you sympathize with the writers and say, look, just get them all back to work so we can have some good stuff.
What other award shows are threatened now if the strike continues?
Well, the big one of all is the Oscars. I mean, the Oscars have never been canceled. They've been postponed 3 times, but they've never been canceled. And that is the holy grail of award shows. That's why we do everything we do here in Hollywood, for better or for worse. And even though it just might sound vain, that's what the actors strive for. And so if there's no award show or if there's a reduced one, everyone's going to notice. Whether I think think that gets everyone back to the table. I'm not so sure. I don't think people are that superficial that just because they want a red carpet, they're going to have to talk and work out a strike.
And what happens here, of course, the mechanism is that the actors, the people who draw attention to the programs, say they're not going to cross the picket lines, and the writers guarantee they're going to have the pickets there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the key. It's that there's no the fact that they don't grant a waiver so they can write for it, they could probably get around that. But if there's no celebrities at these events, that's why people go. That's why there's that's why they're televised, and that's why people, you know, wait online for tickets or for bleacher seats to see what their favorite star is wearing.
Would they have an Oscar news conference like they had at Golden Globes?
I hope not. God, I hope not. But they are making contingency plans. They do have another month and a half. You know, the Globes were a victim of time as well. I mean, they just didn't have enough time. The Oscars, they've already announced that they're trying to, you know, make a contingency plan because they know this could happen. So who knows what it'll be. It probably will stink, but at least it's not going to be a news conference.
What about the Grammys?
The Grammys are not hit as hard. They're based on performances, and a lot of these musicians aren't what the writers striking is going after. They're not going after people like Will.i.am or Black Eyed Peas or whatever. But, you know, there are some people like Justin Timberlake and Beyonce who have SAG cards and who support the writers, and who knows if they're going to cross the picket line. But they've already announced that they're going to picket it. So you might not see as many people, and you're not going to see certainly any performance presenters, but it's not going to be affected as much to the average person.
What about the Directors Guild? They're now in negotiations with the producers. If they make an agreement, is that liable to put pressure on the writers?
Yeah, that's the one thing. Forget the award shows. If the directors come in 4 days make a deal, I mean, that's going to be – everyone will say, well, why can't the writers do that? And that'll be the one that puts the most pressure on. So I think that's going to be the catalyst for everything.
What if they don't? And it boils down, lasts even longer, and SAG deadlines begin to emerge.
If they don't, then you and I will be handing out awards on the street corner of Hollywood and Highland, because I don't know what's going to happen, because then two guilds will be at odds, and the actors will then come, and they support everybody. I mean, it's just going to be a mess, and it's already been a mess. We've never seen anything like this.
Speak for yourself. I'm in SAG and AFTRA. I couldn't do it. So 21 weeks was the length of the 1988 strike.
Yeah.
Are we looking at another one?
Well, I mean, we're certainly pretty close, and it's hitting – it's certainly – it's very – it looks like it's spotlighted because it's during award season. So, yeah, I mean, it's scary for everybody, and there doesn't seem to be any movement to get back to the table. It's not like we are hearing things that they're going to get back. There's no discussion, so it could go a very long time.
All right. Keeping track of it all, Michael Spire, executive editor, Daily Variety. Always good to talk with you.
My pleasure.
Jack Kaiser is chief economist, senior vice president at the Los Angeles Economic Development Corporation, a familiar voice on our program, and always glad to hear from you, except that in this case, the news isn't very good.
No, the news is not good at all. We get estimates from the Motion Picture Alliance website about wages lost by members of the Writers Guild and also the International Alliance, which are the below-the-line workers. And as of this morning, that was about $553 million.
Wow.
So that's money that is not being spent in the local economy, and you hear more stories of people in danger of losing houses, and so that's kind of scary. We know that we have about 10,500 people who are not working right now because you have 60 scripted television series that are produced in L.A. They are dark. A lot of suppliers to the industry are feeling the pain, and then even the Golden Globes' overall impact around $60 million. A lot of people took hits there, Warren. The Beverly Hilton, obviously, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, and the people at the banquet staff at the Beverly Hilton, because they always earn a lot of nice tips that night.
What define below the line for those people in the audience who don't know the lingo.
Okay, below the line is people who work actually on the production, the physical production of the film. Above the line would be the stars, the talent, directors, producers, that type of thing. So it's a very strange lingo that you have in the industry, but it's above and below the line, and the below the line people are really hurting. And I know some people in the International Alliance are a little bit nervous if this goes on too long. They have to work so many hours a year, mm-hmm. or else they won't qualify for the health and pension benefits.
Wow. And as you say, some people are at risk, perhaps, of losing their houses. Then there are all the people who have ancillary relationships with the studios, the people who supply, catering and the makeup people and so on and so forth.
Yeah, gift baskets.
I guess makeup people are below the line. But
well, yeah, gift baskets, but they're in a guild, too. People don't understand. This industry has more unions than you can shake a stick at.
Yeah.
But you have people like Aero Mockup, which is a company out in North Hollywood that provides interiors of aircraft for movie location shoots. A classic car supplier in West Hollywood, classic cars for when you're doing a period film and you need something that looks really authentic, that you go to them. And so these people are all hurting. So the pain is spreading. It's concentrated in the areas where the industry is concentrated. But, for example, even the city of Long Beach, they stand in frequently for CSI Miami, and they estimate they get about $8 million a year from film location shooting activity.
You forget how specialized some of these places are. I mean, if you can't build airline interiors for movie sets, who are you going to build them for?
I don't particularly want one in my house, do you?
I wasn't planning one. I'd love to have one on my plane, but I don't have one of those either.
Oh, okay.
What about bright spots in the L.A. economy right now? It's an enormous economy, one of the biggest in the world. So the kinds of numbers we're talking about would suggest a lot of trouble for, a substantial number of people, but at the moment at least, far from a local recession.
There's some good news out there. One of the industries that should do well is tourism. The U.S. dollar has been declining, and so that makes Los Angeles very attractive to foreign tourists. And then we have a lot happening this year. We have the Broad Contemporary Museum opening up. That will get a lot of attention in the cultural circles. We have the Simpsons ride at Universal Studio. A new ride always generates more business. You have the Grammy Museum opening up at the LA Live project. You have a lot of things like that. And then, very important, an agreement was signed late December 11th between the U.S. government and the Chinese government that will allow more casual Chinese travelers to come to Los Angeles. And we're already the number one point of entry for Chinese travelers. So this means more people out there coming in for tourism. International trade, okay. Technology, okay. And then there's a lot of heavy construction going on. They are actually working on starting construction on Grand Avenue.
So you're talking about mainland China?
Mainland China, yes, sir.
Wow. Do they come here because of Hollywood? I know there are a lot of Taiwanese banks, but they might not be interested in those.
Well, I think they're just coming. They're very interested. Remember, everybody is interested in U.S. culture. And there's a lot of Chinese companies already here doing business. So I think you'll see a lot more Chinese visitors on the streets as we move forward. So it's kind of interesting. A lot of people are nervous. Some people already have California in a recession. We're not ready to make that call yet. But obviously some people hurting.
Housing?
We don't want to go there. Housing is going to be a struggle. You probably will have the housing industry in Southern California for the Inland Empire. It could take out till 2010. L.A. County might be mid-2009. So housing is obviously a real struggle, and that's nerve-wracking. And then anything to do with housing, like financial services, but also retailing. People selling building materials, appliances, and furniture have really taken a whack on the head.
What about trade? This is an enormous segment of the L.A. Economy. The dollar is low. That would be good for exports. What other impacts?
Well, it's definitely opened up a lot of markets for us on the export scene. And we had very, very slow growth in imports last year. And that reflected retailers, especially Walmart, trying to get their inventories under control. And then we also import a lot of furniture and household items through the two local ports. Next year, we think we'll look a little bit better on the import side. But exports should continue to chug right along.
All right, Jack Kaiser, a living encyclopedia on the economy of Los Angeles. Always good to have you with us.
Always nice to chat with you, Warren.
Chief Economist, Senior Vice President, Los Angeles Economic Development Corporation. I'll be right back with Which Way LA.
For more information about Which Way LA or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/whichwayLA. CD copies are also available. Call 1-800-600-KCRW.
Warren Olney back with Reporter's Notebook on Which Way LA. Proposition 93 on next month's state ballot sounds like it might tighten term limits for state legislators, but it would allow Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunez and Senate Leader Don Perata both to serve an extra term in office. They're Democrats, so why would Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger write an op-ed in today's L.A. Times supporting the measure? Dan Weintraub is a Sacramento Bee columnist. His latest book is A Party of One, Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Rise of the Independent Voter. Dan, good to have you with us.
Nice to be back.
How come?
Well, I think it's all about deal cutting. I think the governor is pleased with the progress he's been making with the Democratic leadership on a couple of issues that are important to him, but he's not quite over the hump, and he's either cut a deal behind the scenes or is hoping to grease the levers for one more shot, and that is on health care and water policy.
Health care and water policy. What about Indian gaming?
Indian gaming is up to the voters at this point.
Yeah.
I don't think that he and the legislature have an issue with that one. They all approved the compacts that are on the ballot, but I think he's trying to secure support in the state Senate, first for his health care plan, which has already cleared the Assembly but is pending in the Senate, and also on water policy, which he and Senate Leader Don Perata have been going around and around on, but are reportedly, you know, within millimeters of reaching a deal.
So I just asked about Indian gaming because we talked about it last night on our program. So the Democrats wanted that. It wasn't something that Schwarzenegger had to offer them anything in order to get. They're all obviously supported by some of the tribes that are the most involved. Well, what about the health care plan? Let's talk about that first. What are its prospects given the dreadful condition of the economy and the budget?
Well, if you project forward to November, I think things are going to look a lot different to the electorate. If you put health care on the ballot today, it might be a tough sell.
Mm-hmm.
But since the budget deadlines are in the summer, and even in the worst of times by, say, early September, they've had budget deals completed, which are at least portrayed as solving whatever giant problem we've been writing about, you know, for months on end, then you think of a slightly different environment. You could be going to the polls in November with a governor and a legislature who have just proclaimed at least that they have solved the state's budget problem for good. Maybe they've put something else on the ballot that's dedicated specifically to the budget mess, and you'd end up with a package. So I think the climate's going to be quite different in November. Also, they will try to sell with some legitimacy the idea that the health care plan actually helps the budget situation because it would bring in $4 or $5 billion in new federal money as well as fees or taxes from employers and others.
Now, you said they're close on water. Does that mean that we might see dam construction?
That's the governor's goal. He believes that without new construction of new dams, one above the Sacramento Delta and one below it, that they can never resolve these environmental problems that have been plaguing the water supply.
Let me ask you about the title of your book, Party of One, Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Rise of the Independent Voter. A lot of Republicans say he looks more like a Democrat to them than he does like a Republican or even an independent. How do the two things go together, Arnold Schwarzenegger and this increasing independence of voters in California?
Well, he is a party of one inside the Capitol because clearly the Republicans have their differences with him most of the time or much of the time, and the Democrats have never completely embraced him. They work with him when it suits their purposes, but at other times they've been quite opposed to him. But if you look outside the Capitol, he's actually one of a party of millions. It doesn't really have a name, but many, many Republicans and a ton of independents and a good share of Democrats actually support him. He's still got approval ratings in the mid-60s, which is exceptional for a governor who's been in office for 4 years and been through all the ups and downs that he has. And the Republicans, you know, in the Capitol, they've had their differences with Schwarzenegger, although they like what he's doing on the budget at the moment. But if you look at Republican voters statewide, they're much more in tune with the governor than their elected representatives are. Something like 65% of Republican voters said they supported his global warming bill. He got zero votes for it in the legislature from Republicans.
On the other hand, if he's an independent and if that's the trend of voters in California, is he demonstrating that there may not be the kind of clout that had been hoped for there? Because after all, he's looking at the same problem now that he said he would solve when he first came into office.
Yeah, well, that's more due to his own strategical and intellectual failures. I think when he took office, he really didn't know what he was doing, and he proposed kind of a right-wing budget solution in his first days in office, which promptly got slapped down by the Democrats. And then, afraid that he would be dead in the water in, you know, a month into his term, he essentially let the Democrats write a what he called a balanced budget amendment and went on the ballot, but it was really just a fig leaf, and it didn't accomplish anything. If he had known then what he knows now, I think he would have found a middle ground that very well could have resolved this budget mess, but like you said, it's still hanging around his neck all these years later.
Okay, we started talking about Prop 93. We don't have any time to discuss it. We will be doing programs on it between now and Election Day. And Daniel Weintraub, come back, talk to us about your book.
I'd love to.
We will look forward. Party of One, Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Rise of the Independent Voter. Which Way L.A., produced tonight by Francis Anderton and Gary Scott, our technical director Mike Newport. I'm Warren Alney. Join us again for Which Way L.A. on 89.9 KCRW.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.